welcome to Yada Yada Radio and to our Shabbat edition. My pleasure to have all of you join us. James, you, over the last hour, have sent me an email from the forum about a fellow that wants to, well, that claims, in all caps, of course, that Jews are actually black, and that the Jews that are living in Israel, that are having the Muslims attack them, are really not Jews, that there was an old switcheroo played sometime in history. And mind you, we don't know when that switcheroo occurred, and I bet the Jews would like a refund on the Holocaust, that being true, but you know, and I read this this fellow's comments that the real Jews are black, and it's a really, really common myth today. It's just like there's the
it comes out of the BHI. They're really their interpretations. First of all, they use a King James Version book named after Biblio, for one thing.
Yeah, right.
And then they twist and dance, and it's an amazing thing. It's
I didn't find any statement. He tried to quote like four or five chapters of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and there was not even a shred of a hint of verification from it. And then he resorted to drawings on the walls of the temples, shrines in Egypt, and to my knowledge, there's only actually one drawing that's alleged to be Hebrews that is found in the Egyptian temples and shrines underground that has been preserved, and it's clearly Abraham and his family when they came to avoid famine, and they are drawn with the same skin pigment that the Egyptians have. So, and there are no other depictions of Israelis of any other color in any pigment that has survived to this day. But the reason I bring it up is I don't want to bring it up for one reason, and that is because we're about ready to jump back into the 119th Psalm that is a song on how to maximize your benefit from the Torah. It tells you how to observe it and how to respond to the Torah and what to focus on in the Torah. And my view with James is, I saw this individual excuse me write this stuff is that Yahweh constantly encourages us to observe the Torah, pay attention to what he has to say, do his instructions. And he doesn't just do it in the Torah. Throughout the prophets, I'm now studying Ezekiel, having finished Jeremiah and Isaiah. And throughout everything that he has to say in the major prophets, he's constantly saying, please, listen to what I have to say. Please, you know, change direction. Stop flocking to false gods and walk to me. Start trusting and relying on me as opposed to being estranged from me. And value my Torah instructions. And then he says it over and over and over again. I don't recall a single place where Yahweh says, you know, you and I are really going to get along great if you focus on people's skin color. And my favorite color is black. Are you aware of any place?
No, I hadn't found that yet either. You know, I don't get it. I've
let's just say that it were true, that for the past 3,000 years, that the people who were designated Jews, who were living in Egypt as Israelis, that was all a cruel hoax, that they really weren't Israelis.
It was all
a terrible hoax, and Yahweh's chosen people were actually animus. They were worshiping the streams and the air and the storms and the land and fire throughout Africa. They were illiterate. They had, I don't think we have any surviving writing system from any African civilization. I don't even think we have remnant of an African civilization that goes back more than a few hundred years. So there's no history of African peoples. Now that's not true when you get to Egypt, but the Egyptians were Egyptians; they weren't Africans. So you don't have any record. There's no sign that any were literate. They're out of place in terms of the overall geography, as Yahweh dictates the geography of the Promised Land. And all of a sudden, after all of the prophets, where Yahweh has talked to prophets in this Promised Land, he then is a hoax, I guess, and all of a sudden he says, I don't like that color anymore. I'm going to go with black skin. And I haven't talked to these people. They haven't revealed anything through them. But why not? Change sounds good to me.
Well, the amazing thing.
They actually
take a verse there about they're going to be on boats and wake up in a strange land and equate that to the slave trade coming off, Western Africa.
And that is the... That's the lone extrapolation. So let's take that one statement out of context and say that proves our point. We're going to hang our hat on that one statement out of context. I could take anything out of context and hang my hat on it and come up with a perverse view from Yahweh. But there's a reason that Yahweh doesn't take anything out of context and doesn't want us to. It's because you can't understand anything. What do you do? Yeah. When you're looking at...
The boats that they were put on, they were put over in Rome, and as you explained several months ago, they were peppered throughout Rome, throughout the entire Roman Empire. And one of the things that I know for sure is that the vast majority of the slave trade went to the Arab countries, and the babies were killed. Yeah. By the way,
as it relates to the Romans, the way that most of the Jews were hauled into captivity is via slave ships, because to have marched Jews all the way from Israel all the way through Asia Minor and then through the Balkans and then through and above Greece and then down through into Rome, you'd have lost 99% of them by the time you got there.
Versus
a one-week fail.
One other thing. I mean, if we want to get down to reality, there was roughly 388,000, maybe as many as 400,000 blacks that were sold in the U.S. of the 12 million that were taken across the Atlantic Ocean. Most went to Brazil and French colonies. But of the 400 million or 388 million is what the gold standard is. If you look at the logbooks, they've now become roughly 50 million people. About 14% of the U.S. population. Now, if you look at Europe, you don't have 50 million blacks in Europe.
No.
Why? There would have been far more.
Mm-hmm.
You see. But you do have Jews all over the place in enclaves. It was one of the reasons that I pointed out that in Shiraz, where Yalta is from, there is a group that's been there, and they were about 20,000, and after the Islamic Revolution, they're down to about 8,000. But there is a group of people who have been there since Koresh conquered Babylon. They went back to Shiraz with him. That was the capital of Iran until 100 years ago.
Yeah.
They are still there. Not one of them is black. Not one. Now, how did that happen? You see?
Yeah.
Reality doesn't matter.
The Jewish population in Persia is well known, well attested throughout time. And it is the DNA is the same as those Jews who came out of Europe, who came out of the Holocaust, who came out of Russia, who lived in Israel. The same DNA. And they're not African American.
Well, I had one of them. I had one of them when I showed him this. He said, "Well, what does that mean about the Black Messiah?" I said, "What Black Messiah would you be talking about?" And he said, "Haile Selassie." This was unbelievable to me.
Yeah,
I said, "Do you have another one to smoke?" You know, I mean, it's just the insanity goes on and on, and frankly. They're hateful, by the way, the BHI. They absolutely hate the Jews. I had one of them tell me that he could think of 7 million Zionists that need to die. You know, that just happens to be the population of Israel. So, you know, I mean, when I run into them, we're going round and round. I'm going to tell them what I think about
it. Is it possible to be part of the covenant and not be a Zionist?
No.
No.
I mean, you can be a Zionist by the political definition and not be part of the covenant. But you cannot be part of the covenant and not be a Zionist by the word's definition as Yahweh uses it. Yahweh uses the word as signposts along the way. If you're not reading the signs and you're not along the way, you are not a member of the covenant. So anyone who would demean a Zionist is not a member of the covenant. My view on the whole thing my view on the whole thing is that when somebody gets to the point of Haile Selassie is a Black Messiah, and I've done a study of Haile Selassie. He was a scumbag, scumbag and scallywag, and oh, by the way, he's dead. So that.
Yeah, they sent
the
him.
The moment somebody is
he sent
there,
a guy out to face tanks with spears while he looted the country and hightailed it down to the islands. I know what O'Haile did.
Yeah,
it was one of the big laughs when I was training bodybuilders that were from there. They laughed their asses off about this.
Haile Selassie was an absolute scumbag and nutcase. Prior to that, if you just wanted to say, because there is a one claim. For Judaism, that the skin hue is black, and that's the Falashas. And there is evidence that there is a Yehudim, Yisraelite past amongst the Falashas. They're in Ethiopia. They congregate in Gondor, Ethiopia. I've been there. I've met with the Falashas. They consider themselves Jewish. DNA tests have shown that there is a considerable degree of Jewishness in their heritage. Now, as it relates to the DNA of being a descendant of Abraham, of Yishak, and of Jacob, that truly is significant. Well, Yahweh does not speak of any other race other than the tribes of Jacob. And to whatever degree you want to equate the tribes, the family descendants of Jacob to race, and use Yehudim and Yisrael to designate that race, then Yahweh does go out of his way to say that those are his chosen people. Those were the implements of his revelation. And that he is angry with them, but that he is going to restore his relationship with them. And those of us who are Goyim, like I'm Sioux Indian, who have been adopted into the covenant as opposed to naturally born. And you can be naturally born as a Yehudim and still excluded from the covenant. And most are. There is a distinction. We can't ignore the fact that there is, and that distinction is extremely important all the way through the celebration of the millennium, year 6,000 to year 7,000. But apart from this very small remnant, and like I'm reading Ezekiel now, and Ezekiel is asking Yahweh, says, "I know you're angry at them. Aren't you going to leave a remnant? I mean, on what's happening to them? Yeah, I understand they deserve it, but surely you're going to leave a remnant." Because he says, you know, you're so close to wiping them out. And so this group, this remnant, is really tiny, really tiny. Today there are about 14 to 15 million people that identify themselves as Jewish. I don't know how many of those really are Jewish, but there's 14 or 15 million people, about 7 million in Israel, about 7 million in the United States, and about a million or two elsewhere. And that's a pretty tiny number amongst a world population of 7 billion. And my guess is that a significant number of those who think they're Jewish really aren't. So that's a remnant. And with Muslims trying to wipe them out, that remnant is going to be two-thirds smaller than it is right now. There, to suggest that Africans are the descendants of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, without any evidence to demonstrate that to be the case, without any history of being proficient in Hebrew and that language, or in living in any of the places that Yahweh describes, is so stupid. It almost hurts.
You have to understand that the angle they come at it from is they will say, I didn't say Africans. And you say, okay, what did you say? Well, Egyptians, as an example, were all black. And I said, no, they weren't.
Mm-mm.
There's actually been DNA tests on King Tut. He was like a European today.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, that's not. That's not true.
Beyond
in the south
that,
of Egypt, it is true. But in the when we think of Egypt today, the country Egypt today is much larger than the Empire of Egypt during the time of the pharaohs. And the Egypt of the pharaohs, there was a north and a south. The south didn't go very far south. It really didn't go much further south than Karnak. And that part of Egypt was, as you say, was very light-skinned. The south of there were dark-skinned people. Kush.
I believe they called those Nubians, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that is correct, Nubians. Yeah.
The outrage is this. I don't care what somebody thinks of their skin color. I really don't. But, I know there's only one way, whether somebody's black, white, red, or yellow,
correct,
to enter the covenant. There's only
correct
one path, and it's all got to be done the same way.
Right. I'm red. I'm an Indian. Richard, who is an extraordinary contributor to the Covenant family, along with his wife. His wife is African American. William, our favorite elevator man, he's Puerto Rican. Yeah, Puerto Rican. when we enter heaven, when we are transformed into a spiritual being, we don't have skin. We don't have skin.
No kidding.
It becomes wholly irrelevant. I think that our ancestry, if we are Yehudim, matters for the next 1,019 years. If we're not Yehudim, it is irrelevant. If we are a descendant of Jacob, it is relevant because during the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah, those...
God has plans for
him. Yeah, Yah has plans for him. He absolutely has plans for him. And it's his plans for them really goes right back to all of the commitments that he's made throughout time. He's going to honor his commitments. He's really big on doing what he says he's going to do. And that's great. In fact, because of the commitments that he has, that he's going to fulfill with them, and the opportunity to go off and explore the universe if you're not engaged in one of those administrative positions, personally, I'd rather be adopted. I don't want one of those jobs. I really don't want one of those jobs. And the mission
with no responsibility sounds great to me.
Sounds great to me. Yeah, I'm delighted to be adopted. Don't want anything other than adoption. Happy to be adopted. And I think after the 1,000 years, from everything I can tell, from that point on, there is no distinction. And apart from the millennial celebration of Sukkah, we're not going to have skin. And
well,
I think we'll be able to choose to manifest ourselves in different ways physically when we wish to, but skin is not part of eternity.
Well, the one thing that I point out here, I don't care what they think, okay? They're as interesting to me as the people that build a church based on white Aryan blood and the worship of Adolf Hitler.
Yes,
okay. The BHI hide their hatred a little better than the white hatred group. But I will say this. I pointed out, because I've seen them purposely mislead others that are also black. When these people are interested in looking, they get them off track with the whole race issue. So, you know, they just have to be pointed out for the poison. Religious, and they're religious, by the way, very religious. They play religious dress up and run around with the shofars and the pictures and have religious hats on, and, you know, they play religious dress up.
And the moment I see anybody with a religious dress, other than, you know, if you want to wear, a tizzit, that's just fine. But other than that, and it really should be essentially unseen, then I think you're making a mockery of your life and your relationship with God. The moment I see somebody in religious garb, I, if I'm in a public place, I will walk as far away from them as I can. I'll scowl and then walk away.
Well, the only reason I want to point it out is because they're so damning and misleading, and it's a religion based on political correctness and ignorance and a whole number of other things.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I have some very dear friends that happen to be black and all mixed, Puerto Rican, I guess you would have to say is mixed. It's just something that has to be pointed out. They're pure poison. They are death. You might as well walk into a church if you're going to walk into that outfit. Because
the only way to look at race, dead. And I don't even care if it's Arabs claiming that all Arabs are Muslims and this myth that it's an Arab-Israeli conflict. Any time that you resort to race as the basis of your rage or your sense of superiority, then apart from the uniqueness of Yisrael as it relates to Yahweh, you are off track. You are personally misguided, and if you're saying anything about it, you're misguiding others. Whether you think your race is superior, as the Japanese do or the Germans do, or whether you think that you have a unique standing with God because of your race, you are always wrong. It's just,
you recall in Zechariah where Yah was literally describing, literally, I mean, down to the fence post almost, where the attacks are taking place in the final battle of Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I showed this to one, and I said, now, look, here he comes in. He says, you are my people. They call on Yahweh, and he says, you are my family, and they say, you are our God.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, well, that's just, that's mean spiritually. It doesn't mean a physical place. I said, you are a complete boob.
Yeah.
They literally do not recognize that Yahweh will his feet will literally land in Jerusalem. They don't get it. They
do you know how many times Yahweh talks about Jerusalem and Mount Zion?
Let me guess, 7,000. More than that, maybe. I don't know, but a lot. You know,
and if you think for a moment that there's any other city on earth that he cares a hoot about, then you don't know him. You don't know his word. I'm going to finish this, at least my comments on this. You guys are welcome to go on. By one thought, that would be the same thought I would have for anybody that thinks that they have a unique perspective on what it means to engage in the covenant relationship with Yahweh. If you, by studying the words that comprise the Torah in Hebrew as they are written, have come up with a unique insight, or even a common insight that can be reinforced, and you found a way to reinforce it, or a unique insight that you've been able to glean from the Hebrew describing the Torah and the covenant, then I want to hear everything you have to say, how you came about that insight, and then would love to listen to your perspective as to why that is meaningful. That's how we grow. That's how we learn. All ears. If you want to tell me that your big contribution is that Jews are black, then there is nothing I can learn from you. And the only thing I can advise you to do is to shut up so that you don't beguile other people.
Pretty much exactly what I told that guy.
Yeah. Not worth the time, other than today, the Hebrew Roots movement is growing very quickly. And it is a blend between Pauline Christianity and Rabbinical Judaism. It is really a mess. And this black Messiah, Jews are really blacks, and America, I guess, is the new Israel. That is also really, really.
We're in trouble.
Yeah, I guess, and they're using the King James Bible, which means they're Pauline.
Yeah, that was another thread this guy posted. He was asking for help on translating the King James Bible into Hebrew. I was like, that not only would be stupid, that's counterproductive. With an extremely flawed premise. Yeah, same guy. You want to start with the flawed King James Bible and then translate it. What would you ever hope to gain from that? Then he asked what English translation he should translate from. I'm like, you shouldn't translate from any English translation. We have access to the oldest manuscript.
Yeah.
We have access to the Masoretic text. We have access to the Hebrew text. There is no reason whatsoever to translate from English to Hebrew. That would make it a translation into Hebrew from English, which was translated from Old Latin, which was translated from Old Latin, which was translated from Greek, which was translated from Hebrew.
Right.
And you expect it to even be close to resembling the truth at the end.
It's like the kids' game of playing telephone. Repeating mouth to ear what each person said, and by the time you get to the end, everybody just giggles.
They have an Aramaic Bashura.
Yes, of course.
That does exactly that.
Yes. Yeah, what it does is that it's the oldest extant version is from the 6th century. And they claim that it is the perfect, and that they have it complete, and everything's just perfect. Of course, what's interesting about
it's taken from the Latin Vulgate, because it makes the exact same mistakes that a Textus Receptus makes.
The Vulgate,
and it has all false letters.
Yeah, it was written during the time of Constantine. So, the Vulgate is a 4th century document, and the oldest Aramaic text is a 6th century document. I wish we had an extant copy of Matanyah and Yaakanan, and also Revelation in Hebrew. I think that would be marvelous if we had it, but the Romans destroyed everything that was written in Hebrew. We don't have it. That's just the bottom line is that the Romans loved Greek, and they preserved anything that was in Greek, and they destroyed everything that's in Hebrew. We don't have it. If we had it, I would. We would all
swallow it whole.
Oh, absolutely. And,
but
we don't have it. Yeah, we just don't have it. And one of the things that we have all come to learn is that while we all in this group think in English, we all speak English, we all think in English, we all process ideas in English, I think everyone who is listening has come to recognize probably that the most important 100 Hebrew words. If I tell this group kara, there's probably no one in this group that doesn't know what kara means and how mikra is a derivation of kara, and how kara is an invitation to be called out and to be welcomed into someone's company. If I were to say to this group, Bereth, and that Bereth is based on the Hebrew word Be'eth, and Be'eth is the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and it depicts
and it
a family.
Home and family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think there would
we
be anyone
know.
In this. Right. That I think there's probably 100 words that literally everyone listening tonight knows those 100 words in Hebrew. I would
Azab,
also
the operas, the opposite
yeah,
of Azab, Bereth,
separate,
or
right,
Cole.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, my Paul. Elohim, my Elohim. Yeah. Why have you Azab separated yourself from me? And among this group, I would say that there probably is not a single listener in this group that doesn't know that one of the uniquenesses of Hebrew is that the verbs are not stuck in time. There's no past, present, and future tense. And the profound implication in terms of meeting Yahweh through his words, since his verbs are not stuck in time. Everybody knows that. Everyone in this group knows that every Hebrew verb is scribed with a stem, and that the stems are all relational, and they describe the relationship between the subject and the object of the sentence based upon the action of the verb. Profound that Hebrew would have a language where every verb has a relational orientation. I would say that the vast majority of those listening know that in Hebrew that many verbs are ascribed with a mood, and that the mood is almost always an expression of either first, second, or third person volition, in other words, free will. And so here you have a language that is liberated in time, throughout time, that has relational stems, that has volitional moods, and that has terms that are literally defined by the shapes of the letters that comprise the words. And when you know that Yahweh chose that as the language of revelation, and it's the only language of revelation, it's the language of heaven, it's the language of the Torah, to disregard what you can learn from Hebrew is to say that I'm going to disregard what I can know about God. If you are unwilling to examine the Hebrew from the Hebrew mindset of what these verbs represent and what the nouns convey, then you are precluding yourself from knowing God as he is. Because even when we write and we talk in English, we are conveying Hebrew concepts. So the very idea that someone would view the King James, which is a corruption of the Geneva Bible for political purposes, which was, you know, a corruption of four other translations of the Latin Vulgate, you know, which, as you said, was a translation of New Latin from Old Latin out of Greek of the original Hebrew. You just say, come on. Why are you even bothering to pretend to have an insight if you're that far removed from the truth? You know,
one of the things that that I learned from having understood the way when we see a hyphal stem in there, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, our whole life we grow up and we're watching movies and we're in a society and, you know, it's kind of like a guy killed somebody. You killed somebody. Let's say you killed them in a fit of anger, whatever. And, you know, the theme that we're taught is, will God ever forgive me? Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not even what it says.
Right.
What it really says is if you're continually going out and killing people, maybe in a serial murderer type of scenario.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
You know.
Let me tell you why I'm so glad you brought this up. I spent my free time today reading Ezekiel. And one of the things that Ezekiel that struck me is how many times Yahweh talked about, you know, you're doing really corrupt things. You know, your behavior is an abomination. But if you just stop, if you just refrain from that and turn to me and listen to me and pay attention and observe what I have to say, all is forgiven. All of the things you've ever done wrong, I will forget. No matter how abominable they were, I will forget. All you have to do is stop being a jerk. It's why we didn't talk about this when we were talking about Hebrew, but in Hebrew there are two conjugations, perfect and imperfect. And all of God's instructions to us, like don't make a habit of killing, don't make a practice of committing adultery, don't continuously bear false witness. Every one of those was written in the imperfect. And to have a language that allows that ongoing aspect so that you're no longer in violation of it when you stop is just so important to communicating what God has to say. And that's why in Ezekiel, it's just over and over and over again. If a person is lost and they're doing all sorts of things which are really inappropriate, religiously, politically, militarily, and they simply stop, refrain from doing those things, and they turn to Yahweh and walk to him along the path that he has provided and listen to what he has to say, then Yahweh says, not only will I view them as righteous, but I will absolutely forget about and wipe out all traces of everything they've ever done that was shameful.
Yeah, they've got a ticket right out of it. But then again, what's beat into our heads all our lives is not only did God say, don't ever do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but also there
thou
has to
not.
Be punishment. There has to be a punishment. Therefore, we have these laws. And of course, none of this
you
is
know, you can be,
Yahweh.
You can be a...
These are man-made precepts.
For example, the suicide bomber that killed the two Jews today, no hope for them. But let's say the two Muslims that went and kidnapped the Jew today, and let's say that those guys mutilated their own daughters as part of female circumcision, and let's say that those guys turned their own sons into would-be suicide bombers. About as heinous as you could be, that they're overtly worshiping Satan as Allah, that their enemy is Yahweh's chosen people. If either of those two fellows that kidnapped the Jewish soldier today were to say, you know, I've been thinking about my behavior, and this doesn't make any sense to me. This religion is way too stupid to be trustworthy. I think there is God, and I want to come to know him through the Torah. And they start reading the Torah, and they come to know him and embrace the conditions of the covenant. They're a member of the family. Now, the likelihood of that happening is probably 1 in 100 billion. But you could have been a mass murderer in your life if you stop doing it and you turn to Yahweh and embrace the covenant. It's forgotten. It's not only forgiven.
And again, I just want to throw this in. I'm going to talk about a big Christian misconception here about forgiveness. You know, forgive everything. You know, you stub your toe, you forgive the table that you hit. Forgive everything, you know. And really, what Yahushua was saying is you forgive your brothers, which is when we think about the thousands that Yahweh calls our brothers out of the billions that have lived.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean we go around bumping into everybody, forgiving them. There's
right.
a big, big, big difference in my mind anyway.
Yeah. Well, I know
what's your
my,
thoughts on that?
My level of support for a brother. If, for example, if somebody sends me an email and Larry, their concern is maybe that you were a little too willing to jump down their throat on the email, the likelihood of me responding is almost nil because you're my brother. I'm going to give you a much wider path. That's probably not the right way to say it, but
birth.
You're my brother. It's really hard for me to get mad at you. And I'm not in a position where I am going to be critical of you because it's. But now, if Barack Abomination were to climb down the throat of Netanyahu, I'm going to climb all over him. He's not my brother. So yeah, if that's your point that I treat my brothers
that
and
is
sisters
my point.
In the covenant differently than I would and hold. I hold them to a different standard. I hold my brothers and sisters in the covenant to the standard of family and to recognizing that, great example would be, there was a period of time where I wasn't crazy about being married. And I was maximizing at the time some of the issues with my wife that weren't a lot of fun. And, went to my father-in-law and said, this is not working out. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And he said, yeah, I agree. Every point you made is valid. I would have all those issues too. You know, I'd understand if you were to give up on it. But if I were you, I wouldn't do that. And, he wouldn't explain why he wouldn't do it. And it was about a year later that I realized, if she were to view me through the same lens, I'm going to look pretty crappy. And then you realize, that if the whole idea of family is that you look past the flaws of those you love, those that you care about, and you emphasize the characteristics that you enjoy. And Yahweh's ability to do that is vastly greater than ours because he specifically doesn't see any of their flaws, and anything that we've done in the past that would be irritating, he's forgotten.
He also doesn't have an ego. That's a problem
right. I mean, he just happens to be perfect. The rest of us aren't. And once I started to look at my wife as here's all of the wonderful qualities and how fortunate I am to have someone in my life that has all these wonderful qualities, and I just didn't let any of the negative issues matter anymore.
Like rolling
we've
pins
had,
upside the head and so forth, things like that.
Yeah, it's just now as far as I'm concerned, I can't imagine spending my life with anybody else.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's what a marriage is anyway. So.
But that is, I think, when Glenn today was talking about why most people walk away from God, and that's because of their shame. He compared it to Adam and Shaw in the garden and how once they knew that they had corrupted Yahweh's testimony and done something that he specifically requested they not do, chosen not Yah, if you will, that they were ashamed, and so they felt naked, and so they were trying to run away from God, and his point was that that's the reason most people run away from God. They're ashamed. Now, I think that a lot of people run away from God because they've got a huge ego, and they think that they can fleece people by controlling them. But a lot of people are just ashamed. And then this really brings us right back down to what we're talking about here. I've got lots of flaws, but I'm not the least bit uncomfortable in God's presence. Because I know he sees me as perfect, and that's what family is all about. Family is enjoying the benefits of each person's unique contribution to that relationship. Yahweh has an entirely different standard for family than he has for not family. The standard for family is the Torah. It's all about enrichment and uplifting and enjoyment and perfection, making us perfect. That's the standard he has for his family. His standard for the rest is you're either going to be dead or eternally incarcerated. So, And matter of fact, throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh is always saying that by the standards that they have established and the way that they judge, I'm going to judge them. So all the political types, you know, that are posturing and the religious types that have their posture, God said, okay, it was, you established these as your rules, I'm going to judge you by those rules. Good luck with that, you hypocrite. But God does have a different standard for his family. That standard happens to be the Torah. And we're accepted in his family even though we are not perfect. And the other thing that was I just thought was so important about all of this, because it really does destroy a Christian myth, is the Christians have God knowing all. You know how many times Yahweh says that that I am promising you that I will forget and no longer remember anything that you have done that is inappropriate. Now, when he talks about forgiveness, it's not just that I'm calling you not guilty and that we still know what you did, but I'm just saying that that doesn't matter anymore. What he's saying is it didn't happen because there's no memory of it. You won't have a memory of it. I won't have a memory of it. He won't have a memory of it. And that's the only
place. That's big. That's something we can't do. But again, we all have egos, don't we?
Yes, we can't do that. No, we can try, and I think to the greatest degree we try, particularly amongst those we love and family, the better off we are. There's no reason to harbor animosity at a wrong perceived amongst family members. So we can try. We can actually make, you know, do a, you know, a tolerable job at it. All right. So much for the misconceptions and imperfections and the like. This is number 111. We're right towards the end of the nun statements. This begins, I have inherited, this is 111, I have inherited and taken possession of your eternal testimony. Forever and throughout time, they are indeed the celebration of my heart. I think that there's lots that we can learn from a very simple statement like this. The first is that if we want to look at what we inherited from Yahweh, as his children, the single most important thing that we inherited from Yahweh is his instruction, his testimony. Because without his testimony and his instruction, we've got nothing. With his instruction, with his testimony, having inherited that, we have access to everything. So the single most valuable entity in the universe is the Torah, at least from the perspective of humankind. I mean, yes, I know that Yahweh is, you know, eminently valuable. But Yahweh, in our world, is the Torah. He is the Torah. I mean, that is who he is in our world. And I view the Torah, Dode is saying the same thing here, that the Torah is the single most important inheritance we as humans have. When our Father, Heavenly Father, gave us a gift, the most valuable gift that he gave us is his Torah. Now, some would say, well, you know, he gave us the gift of eternal life. Well, that's unknown apart from the Torah. Some would say, well, he gave us the gift of salvation. Well, that's unknown apart from the Torah. Some would say, well, you know, he gave us the gift of life. You know, we would know life, but it would be mortal without the Torah.
It'd be pointless.
It'd be pointless. Yeah, we'd be no different.
You'd have to invent a religion somewhere.
Yeah. Yahweh's existence without the Torah, the ability to know him, would be meaningless to us.
Right. And I would go this far, and I've done this before, and I've never had anyone challenge me. I'm kind of almost hoping someday someone challenges me on this. Without the Torah, it's impossible to know Yahweh. Without the Torah, it's impossible to engage in a relationship with Yahweh. Without the Torah, it's impossible to be saved by Yahweh. So if you do not observe the Torah, there is no chance whatsoever that you know who Yahweh is, that you've engaged in a relationship with him, or that you have been saved by him.
Well, who in the world would challenge that?
Well, it's opposed to Judaism. There isn't a single Jew that would agree with that because they think that the Talmud is the end all and be all. Muslims
would challenge what you revelations said. From God.
Yeah, and of course every Christian.
Yeah, God revealed this, though.
You know, Christians.
Well, I guess
Yeah, a Christian would say you can know God through Jesus Christ.
That would,
and I would say, how could you know God through Jesus Christ? You don't even know his name. How can you know him if you don't even know his name?
Well, I've heard you say that to them. So, yeah, you would say that.
You can't understand anything he said without the Torah.
Right. Yeah, you have no clue what he was doing on Passover. You have no idea what he was doing on Passover without the Torah.
Yeah.
You have no idea what happened on the Shabbat without the Torah.
You're celebrating Good Friday and Easter.
Right. Yeah.
He was engaged in pagan holidays like Muhammad.
So here's Dode saying, I have inherited and taken possession of your eternal testimony, your Eduth, which is your restoring witness. So restoring witness, eternal testimony is Eduth. There's two aspects, though, to the verb nahal, which is inherit, to take possession of, to receive. As humankind, we have all inherited Yahweh's gift of the Torah. But Dode and those who are with us tonight, we've taken possession of it. Now, we haven't taken possession of it. You know, for example, me grasping hold of and spending lots of time with the Torah and observing it is not like I'm taking it from you. You know, the more of us who take possession of the Torah, the more of the Torah there is to go around. You know, it's a pretty marvelous book.
Yeah, it's not a zero-sum game out there.
No,
you know.
But it's this notion that, you know, God wants to save all the little children. That's just not true. Well, God takes no pleasure in the death of a soul. The fact of the matter is that very few people take possession of his gift. Very few. And if you don't take possession of it, the inheritance doesn't do any good. You know, my father was so threatening that I had to get a restraining order. I don't even know if he's alive or dead. To this moment, I mean, I really do not know if he's alive or dead.
Really?
I have no idea. Yeah, I have no idea. I don't have no idea where he is, if he's alive. And I do have no idea where he is if he's buried. You know, my father was insecure and so threatening to me that I finally realized that, first of all, I had to get a restraining order against him to keep him from carrying out his will, which was to kill me. And what I learned was I learned a great deal about the malady called insecurity, and that the more I would try to help and resolve the relationship, the more I'd make it worse. Many of those listening, particularly someone like JB, knows that we had a fellow that went off the deep end because of questioning Paul, and his big argument was that Paul didn't write Galatians. And, you know, my response was, you know, I'm not going to bother to read your book because it's irrelevant if he wrote it or not. The fact is that he takes credit for it, and everyone assumes that he did write it, so what's matters is what the book says and the fact that that book is in the heart of the Christian New Testament. This person was insecure. And so any attempt to try to rectify that relationship only made it worse. My father was exactly the same way. So from my point of view, the only way that I could deal with this is to realize I can't help him, but it's important that I not destroy myself by allowing myself to be subjected to that. So from that point on, just as my father didn't exist. And while there are some times where I regret the fact that my sons didn't have a chance to get to know a grandfather, I'm also grateful that they didn't get to know the man that was so threatening to me. So that offsets. But the point was, if my father were to have left me an inheritance, and my father was reasonably well off, I would never know it. And so what good would an inheritance be if you don't know of it or don't take possession of it? And so we do have a Father that has left us a valuable inheritance, the most valuable inheritance in the universe, His Torah. But if you don't take possession of it, if you don't even bother to know that it's there, if you're estranged from Him, it won't do you any good. Now, I just as a, it's kind of a bombshell.
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, it's a very good point. Can I ask you something here,
sure.
Yada?
Uh-huh.
What your father wanted to kill you?
Yes, in fact, what
literally
what finally caused the rift? And this has value. I mean, my personal life has no relevance whatsoever to this program or anyone's relationship with Yahweh. The only thing that is helpful is that Yahweh did ask us to, you know, when we become part of the covenant, He didn't say just walk away from your country, which was Babylon. He also says walk away from your father and your father's house. So it's important to for us to understand what that means. And in my case, it was extraordinarily vivid. By the my father wrote me about 50 hate letters, demeaning me in the bulk of the letter, and then love Dad at the end of it. And the letters became, oh yeah, it was just always, and it was always written in three-part forms, that, you know, back in the days of the NCR paper, and you could have a three-part form. He kept one part and get me two.
You got to be kidding.
Oh, no.
This
no,
is bizarre. This
oh, no,
is
and handwritten notes. Yeah, handwritten notes, and there's 50, 60, 70 of them.
Carbon
and they
copies,
were,
the whole
and they were, yeah, and they were always extraordinarily derogatory about me as a person. And then they went from being just derogatory to me as a person to being threatening. And then in some of the letters, he became physically threatening to me in the letters, and then he called a mutual friend and told him he was going to kill me. And the friend was in a professional position who knew that he now had a legal mandate that he had to turn that information over, not only to me, but also to the police. And so I stopped reading the letters, but my wife was really worried about it because of the kids and how threatening he was. And so she continued to read them, and she said, the man who wrote you these letters is a genuine threat, and it's not fair to keep the children around a threat like this. If you're not going to do something about it, we're going to have to leave. And she said, now,
was there any particular reason that for these threats, and you were such a horrible guy? Because, you know, most people that know much about you see kind of the opposite of that. And I'm just, it's really, really strange.
You know, with an insecure person, you could give me an idea of the mentality. Back in the day, you know, the Christmas lights were really important. And you'd go from, you'd go into a neighborhood and you'd see lots of Christmas lights up. If a house had 10,000 Christmas lights, but there was one that was out, my father would be so focused on the one that was out that he could not even grasp the beauty of the others that were on.
This is the old can't see the forest for the trees guy. Wow.
This is the guy that the one flaw is focused on and magnified no matter how much maybe other things that were worthwhile. And so, you know, I'm a flawed guy. So everything that I ever did in my life that was, that didn't meet his standard was a flaw to be focused on. Anyway, my wife set a meeting with a psychologist for me to go and review the letters and determine whether or not there was anything that could be done. And so I went and I met with a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said that this will be the one and only meeting that we will have, that he has read the letters, and that he has also now received threatening phone calls. He said, so the man that wrote these letters has been following you. He knows that you're here. He has threatened to kill me. He will kill you if you don't do something about it. You're not going to pay for this meeting. I don't want your name or a check or anything in the record regarding this meeting. There's the back door. I would like you to leave now, but with this warning. If you don't do something, he will kill you. And
I thought I had a bad time when my dad.
Yeah, so I took the letters to an attorney that I had gotten to know, and I asked him. I said, "My wife is saying that this is so serious that if we don't get a restraining order and do something about this, that it's not safe to have the kids here." And so he read the letters, and he says, "I'll take care of it." He gave a copy of the letters to the judge. The judge read the letters. He says, "I don't want any testimony in this case. I've read the letters." And he says, I called my father to come up. He says, "I don't want to hear a word from you. I'm just going to tell you that the man who wrote these letters is extraordinarily mean and extraordinarily dangerous. Your son has asked for a restraining order. I'm going to grant it for him. It's going to be an indefinite period of time for as long as you live. And if you violate this order, I will make certain that you are so far in jail that you will need a straw to see sunlight. Do not toy with me. Do not test me. Is that clear?" And that was it. The last I saw of him. That was...
How long ago was that?
20 years or more.
Yeah. It was 20 years from the time I left my dad's car to the next time I saw him. But
I tried to see my parents'
relationship.
Because my mother, I had heard indirectly, my mother decided to side with my father. My father was physically abusive, which is why that occurred. He threatened to, or actually did, perpetrate bodily harm. And so I got word that my mother had had a stroke and she was not doing well. And throughout this time, I had offered my mother, says, "Listen, if you want to leave him, we'll provide a place for you to live. We'll take care of you." But she couldn't bring herself to do that. So I heard she was ill. All the way to the side of the country, we tried to contact her. We could not do so. And so I flew out. My wife and I, we flew out to the hospital where she was in, and the hospital administrator says, "I can't let you see her. He said that he is prohibiting you from seeing her, and he says I can't do anything to resolve that. Husband takes precedence over son." And he says, "I will tell you, this is the meanest, scariest man I've ever met in all the time I've had this job, but I can't let you see her." And we tried for the next day to arrange it. It wasn't possible, and I flew back. So my mother's dead. I never got to see her again. So when I say that I'm really happy with my Heavenly Father, and that the spiritual mother and being part of the covenant family, and that it is a huge difference from my own, I have a life experience that shows me how much better what we have is than what I have left behind. Don't very often
almost
get Larry
shocking.
Speechless, but you're...
That's shocking. I mean, almost, shocking.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can tell to tell my voice that I'm not looking for any sympathy here. I'm not at all.
No, you're not.
I wouldn't normally share the story, because the story obviously is embarrassing that you'd have parents that hate you so much. Because there's nothing but embarrassment that is in association with this. But the contrast between how just approachable, loving, supportive Yahweh is, the way that rather than magnifying our faults, he doesn't even see our faults. And he just thoroughly loves every moment with us that's positive, where we're spend time just talking about his nature, what he's offering, what he's like. So, having gone through that, I wish there was there's other ways to develop character. Part of a person's character is the harsh experiences they've had to overcome. And so if you can survive that as a young man, then you have a little less concern when someone says, later says, "Hey, I want you to write a book and then go on radio shows openly exposing and condemning Islam, and I want you to do it in your own name. You know, it's all right. You know, I've survived a lot of stuff in my life. You know, I'm good with this. So
you give it a shot. Huh?
Yeah,
okay,
you know,
well,
your willingness to put your neck on the line and the comfort level, you know, is greater. Now, would I prefer to put my neck on the line based on love and support and know that if I fail, that those who care about me are going to be there to protect me and to help me get back up? Absolutely. But, you know, there's also a benefit of knowing, okay, I've been extraordinarily vulnerable and did not have support and survived it.
I know that feeling. Trust me when I tell you. I do know that feeling.
Yeah.
It just, over the years, I guess, he mellowed or something. I mean, they weren't allowed to say my name in the house for 15 years, if you can believe that. But
I never got to the point of hate letters,
and I'm going to murder you and so forth.
Yeah, we'd send a card, and it would come back unanswered. And, you know, if I were to try to reach out to my younger brother's mentally handicapped, 3 years younger than I am, so he's obviously an adult now. But if he were to try to talk to me, he'd be beaten. So, you know, there's life is a painful experience.
But we could say Yah was sort of the antithesis of.
Yeah.
When it comes to criticism, anyway.
I have a genuine passion and comfort with Yahweh. I mean, if anything, you know, if you were to accuse me of being wrong as it relates to my perspective on Yahweh, because my perspective on Yahweh is only important in that I share it with great enthusiasm, and I share it often. So
that's right. You do.
In that regard, the single greatest vulnerability that anyone would have that's listening to my perspective on Yahweh and my enthusiasm for this, because I do present it with so much passion, is that I am really comfortable. I am really comfortable. I do not put him on a pedestal. I do not worship him. I am not awed by him. I am extraordinarily comfortable. It's the kind of relationship I see God happiest when we're standing side by side, when we're walking together, when we're engaged together. I'm going to give you an example.
When he picks us up, really.
I had a 3-hour conversation with my youngest son earlier this week, and we were talking about all manner of different things. You know, his dating life, his studies, his teaching, people in general, you know, baseball, you just name it. We talk about everything, family. And in that conversation, so, you know, one of the things that's really remarkable is, we have a father-son relationship, but bottom line is you're my best friend. And his response to me is the same thing. And so I have a father-son relationship with Yahweh. But as important as it is for me to recognize that he's dad in the sense of the roles of father and son, we're just best friends. Now, I know that's really, for a lot of people, when you consider my flawed nature and Yahweh's greatness and perfection, that maybe, you know, they might think, well, that's pushing it too far. I'm telling you, that's the only thing I would tell you is that I'm not going to tell you that I'm right in pushing it that far. I'm going to tell you that's where I am. It's important that you know that I view Yahweh as my friend. I am very comfortable around him. I am not the least bit nervous about doing something that's going to make him mad. I am, you know, never on edge. Never the least bit uncomfortable. And that's why when I found Doe's explanation of how to properly observe the Torah, and everything was about thinking and engaging and discovery, and embracing all of this stuff and going from mind to heart, that I said, yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. So I look at everything that God said as once you're my kid, we're good, and we're good forever. So if anything, the aches and pains of the past have inclined me to the point where I view Yahweh is extraordinarily approachable and extraordinarily friendly and very eager to share and to have exchanges. And part of that, folks, and you hear it through Doe's comments, he acknowledges that the thing that he inherited and that he loves is Yah's testimony, because it's the way that he engages with Yahweh, which is the way that I engage with Yahweh. But when Yahweh goes so far out of his way to talk to us about his love for this man, what you should, I think, take away from that is that even though Doe was a flawed guy, the very fact that Doe engaged in mentally stimulating discussions with Yahweh, Yahweh found to be joyous. And so I think we ought to all relax and just recognize that we can be as flawed as Doe so long as we're engaging in meaningful conversations with Yahweh, and those conversations begin by listening to him and then responding. I mean, I would say that
that's more profound, but it's true.
Yeah,
the
more rubbish of Christianity and politics and patriotism I scrape away, the more I'm left with just a very simple recognition. Yahweh created the entire universe and life simply for the covenant. And all the covenant is a family relationship. And he has invited us to join him in his family. He's asked five things of us to participate. And he's promised us five things in return. And there's nothing more to life, the Torah, the universe, God, our existence, than that. Everything else simply helps us understand who Yahweh is, what he's offering, how we can participate, and what the benefits are. That's it. And it's amazing to come through, you know, 12 years of intense study, having journeyed through all of these religions and politics and places on earth, and come to an understanding that can be stated in a single sentence. But I think that's all there is to it. Now, because it's that simple, it's still, the more we study, the more beneficial that relationship is, the deeper our understanding is, the more we move from knowing to absolute conviction, and the more we move from knowing to conviction, the more comfortable it all becomes. Now, it's when I started Blog Talk Radio and then Shattering Myths, my single biggest concern was that I knew that I didn't know as much as lots of other people. And I was not so much afraid that I would embarrass myself, but that I would embarrass Yahweh by somebody engaging in a debate where they knew more than I did. And then I finally realized, no, it's never going to embarrass Yahweh or myself in that way, because understanding is vastly more important than knowing. So there, no matter what somebody may know about some issue that exceeds what I know, it's irrelevant. Because once you understand who Yahweh is, what our relationship is, what he is offering, how we can participate, and what the benefits are, and where to go to find out all of that information, and how all the pieces fit together in that regard, nothing else is important.
Well,
that's the inheritance.
That's my take too. That's it.
That's the inheritance.
That's what there is. You know, I've had several people, you know, over the years send me messages saying, you know, Larry, I used to follow you, but I won't anymore because of this or that or whatever. And
you say, why did you ever follow me?
What are you
because,
talking
you know,
about?
By the way, I'm not trying to lead anybody. I myself am a follower.
I'm sharing Yahweh's words. I mean, now you either believe his words or you don't believe his words. Leave me out of this equation.
Like I'm
trying to build some religious group. You know, it's just incredibly insane.
I think that,
if you
don't have the view that while I love my relationship with Yahweh, I love the covenant, and I'm the richest guy in the universe. Now, there's a lot of people equally as rich. But that doesn't change the fact that since we're all equally rich and we're the richest in the universe, I'm the richest guy in the universe. That being true, it's one of the things that's really important if you're going to be part of the mission to share Yahweh's words is that you come at it like Yirmiyah came at it, like Moshe came at it, which is that, hey, I'm not qualified. My diction's not very good. I'm just not worthy of this. Okay, that qualifies you right there. So one of the things that's important is to tell people, if you're in an outreach mode, which you do through your Facebook and I do through the radio programs and the books, if you're in an outreach mode, it's very important to let people know that you're a flawed implement and that you are irrelevant to what we're talking about. This is not a religion or a cult where an individual is important and they're the divine seer. We all begin this by saying, I'm flawed, I'm an implement, I'm irrelevant. Do not follow me. You can't make a donation to me, you can't follow me. I really don't even want to be known because the only one worthy of being known is Yahweh. Let's just focus on what did he say? What does it mean to us? What can we understand from his testimony? And when somebody...
Well, just the mere fact somebody would write you that, they're coming at it from the wrong angle. I mean, that's... I don't have anything to do with it. I'm sharing Yahweh's words. You can believe his words. You don't believe his words. You know, you got... free will, come at him or walk away of your own volition, but leave me out of it. I mean,
yeah. Now, I do think, that all being true, is the single most exciting, most worthy, most beneficial, most rewarding thing we can do is to share Yahweh's testimony, is to be
I've inherited
and taken possession of your eternal testimony. It's the most important thing we can do in our lives, the most rewarding, the most beneficial. He goes on to say, forever and throughout time, they are indeed the celebration of my heart. James was the one who pointed this out to me, which is that in Hebrew, if you really study heart in Hebrew, what they're talking about here is not so much as an emotion, but having something... be so ingrained within you that it becomes part of you. That, you know, you can have ideas in your head that you don't embrace, but once you've accepted those ideas, once you've identified those ideas, that they are internalized. And so internalizing something is what it means to have it in your heart.
That's why Doug was so free.
Right. You're taking it right into every intricate nexus that formed
his being,
yeah.
You know.
Exactly. To write the Torah on your heart doesn't mean that the organ that beats within our body is going to have a script on it. It means that it's going to be ingrained right into our core, is what it means.
Yeah.
And, you know, the heart is the actionable part of our inside, that muscle
forms
that is
your
beating. And so the actionable part of our life being is where that Torah is going to reside. You know, he could have said, I'm going to put it in your brain. Well, then we could know it. We could think about it. But having it ingrained on our, written on our heart, it's literally then
it's
the essence of our nature. You know? So it's right at our core. Now, what you'll notice here, though, that this went from don't recognizing I have an inheritance, possessing that inheritance, understanding the inheritance was the restoring and eternal witness of Yahweh, and then saying it's not only in my heart, it's what my heart celebrates. It's what we celebrate on the Shabbat. It's what we celebrate every day that we wake up and greet our Heavenly Father. It's what we celebrate every moment that we study His Word, when we come together as a family. So again, with the recognition of what heart means, this is, I think, the first time that the Hebrew word for do is in Dode's voice. And that's how we started this, was somebody wrote and was concerned that we had diminished the acting upon Yahweh's instructions, as opposed to recognizing that the thing that He wants us to do is to observe, to understand, to respond, and to engage in the covenant. So here's the first time that do, the Hebrew word for do, asha, is written in Dode's voice. He begins by saying, I incline my heart. Inclining the heart means you lean it towards, you extend it towards, you're drawn towards. I incline my heart to act upon, to actively engage in, to celebrate and to profit from, La Asha, to approach by engaging in. Your engraved and clearly communicated prescriptions, which cut me into the relationship, your choke. Unto time immemorial, as a result of the benefits incurred. Now, this is something we talked about in our last program. Would you accept the five terms and conditions of the covenant if none of the five specific benefits of the covenant were being offered? And my answer
and we
is,
agreed yes.
Yes, yeah, because yeah. Actually all five of the terms and conditions of the covenant are benefits. Now, that said, I'm going to tell you that there are, in fact, I'm going to say there are some. I'm going to tell you that every one of the benefits of the covenant really, really means a lot to me. I mean, so I don't want to pretend that they're not important to me. The idea of becoming immortal, knowing how short life is, and now having all of the time that you could ever want to enjoy moments as well as eternity, being eternal, that's a big deal. As flawed as I am and as many issues as I have, being perfect is a really big deal. Becoming a spiritual adopted member of Yahweh's family, literally becoming His kid, that's a really big deal to me. Probably the biggest of them. But uniquely, and we all have our differences, but being enriched by discovery, by learning, that is the thing that personally trips my trigger. It's why I identify so much with Dode. I think Dode was very similar in this regard, that the highlight of Dode's existence was learning. And it's the highlight of my existence. I love to learn. I've got to say that, I mean, I also love the love that comes from the covenant family. And then lastly, the one that, I mean, it's not as important to me, but it's still, I'm sure in eternity it's going to be a big deal, is being empowered. By being transformed from a physical form to an energy-based spiritual being, the power difference in those things is infinite. And so having the kind of power where we can go anywhere and do anything, it's pretty cool. So by saying that Dode, what he is saying here is that he's inclined his heart to Yahweh based on his celebration and the benefits of the engraved instructions that cut us into the relationship into time immemorial, forever, as a result of the benefits incurred. I don't think there's anything wrong with tying it all together. If Yahweh didn't want us to celebrate the benefits of the covenant, he would have told them to us. Now, he didn't bribe us and said, you're going to be really rich. He didn't bribe us and say, you know, you're going to be laying on comfy beds of goose down. He didn't bribe us and say that, I can't say, I have to actually say he did offer the finest wines. He does say that and the choicest meats, he says, are going to be available. But
he did tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And yet, even with all that truth out there, so few people take him up on the offer. And I think that's because of religion. In my opinion, that's what it's.
Yeah, even if there were the five conditions of the covenant are all benefits, and we should all do them just because they're all beneficial. But for any one of the benefits of the covenant, you have to be foolish to squander it. God is asking.
Well, that's the majority of the world, isn't it?
Yes,
isn't it?
But Doden is acknowledging that there are benefits of the covenant, and we've just talked about there's five of them. That one of the benefits of the covenant is that we're cut into the relationship forever, and that's worth celebrating. That, by the way, is the conclusion of the nun statements, and so he ends the nun statements by talking about being cut into this relationship, celebrating it, benefiting from it for all time as a result of the benefits incurred. Now, Dode isn't, by the way, saying here that the reason that he's inclining his heart to act upon the engraved invitations to be cut into the covenant is because of the benefits incurred. But he is saying that his heart is leaning to Yahweh, is being drawn to Yahweh based upon his willingness to act upon the engraved instructions that cut us into the relationship, causes us to be immortal as a result of the benefits incurred. So it's the benefits that cause Doe to be able to celebrate this. He's celebrating the benefits. He's not saying, you know, God, the only reason I'm listening to you is because, you know, you've offered me this great deal. But he's saying that knowing this deal that you're offering me, I'm going to celebrate it. And shouldn't we all celebrate it? I mean, it's the ultimate offer. Now, we'll just have time here for the first of the Shemek statements. And Shemek is drawn in the form of a thorn. And the reason it was drawn in the form of a thorn is it's piercing, but also it was divisive. So it could pierce your soul to get your attention, but it could also create separation. You know, if you were in an area and there were bad guys or bad animals out there and you wanted to protect your flock and your family, you would build a hedge of these thorns. And so that's the concept here of the Shemek. And it begins, with those with divided loyalties I hate, and I'm opposed to them. It's the Torah that I have developed a close relationship with. You know, this is where we're going to begin a week from today. And you know, on a 1 to 10 scale of statements in the 119 Psalms, I give this one a 10. I think it is.
There's a lot of tens in there, but yeah,
a lot of tens in there. But to me, this really speaks to Yahweh's heart. If you, no matter how many times you read through the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the one thing you get is that God is does not like divided loyalties. You're either with him or against him. If you're with him, you do not have a divided loyalty. He really dislikes a divided loyalty. And that's why we're talking about this thorn that creates this hedge that divides. If there's a hedge between you and God, then you're not with him. And one of the things that I learned when I was dating is one of the greatest concepts of love is being totally vulnerable to someone. And when you're totally open and vulnerable to someone, them not taking advantage of that but embracing you because you've let down all of your guard. And I think that's part of this too, is this, let's not have to hedge. Yahweh knows who I am. I am vulnerable, and yet he, rather than making me feel uncomfortable for being just letting all of the guard down, it just says, here, come. Wrap my arms around you. And Dode is saying that those who pretend to have divided loyalty, you know, they're political, they're religious, they claim that they have a relationship with God, but they cling to politics and religion, or whatever it may be, patriotism, militarism. Dode is saying that he's a bit of a Larry. In fact, he's a lot of a Larry. He says, I'm opposed to
them. Really? I got to tell you, of all the statements in the 190, or, you know, the 119th, yeah. I did, that is my favorite. I will openly admit it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, those who want to straddle the thorn
fence.
Head, yeah, and you know, and have one leg on one side and the other on the other, and pretend that you can still be a little bit religious and have a relationship with Yah. Dode is saying that he hates those who have a divided loyalty.
Yeah, and it's reminiscent of Yahweh in Revelation talking about the Laodiceans and being lukewarm and vomit.
Exactly. Well, it's no different. It could be what he put Dode's statement here that Yahweh inspired in a more visceral kind of
visual format.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I actually like the vomit. By the way, I mean, I really. It's so, like Yahweh says that the prayer of those who are Torahless looks like they have. Those who pray to me, who are without the Torah, look like they have bull dung on their faces. Yeah, one of the things I love a lot of things about Yahweh, but the idea that he is willing to be blunt. He just says, "This is. Don't kid yourself about
this. Is.
If you're praying to me and you I haven't come to me through the Torah." I don't see you as beautiful. I don't see you as my child. I'm not listening to you. As far as I'm concerned, you're as stinky and as ugly as cow dung. I mean, why not be that blunt? You think there's going to be a lot of cow dung in heaven?
No, I would assume not. You know, unless we decide to go to some other planet and walk around for the moment, there won't be any. But
what is the opposite, according to Dode here, of divided loyalties? What did Dode described what the opposite is of divided loyalties?
Well,
the Torah.
I mean, it's
the
just
Torah I love,
Yahweh's
and I,
words.
Yeah, and I have a close relationship with it. So the antithesis of divided loyalties is having a close personal relationship with loving Ahab. Literally loving the Torah. Now, you'd say, well, the Torah is a document. Why would you say that you love a document? Because this document is Yahweh. In our world today, there should be no distinction in anyone's mind between Yahweh and the Torah.
Yeah.
If you don't love the Torah, you can't love Yahweh. If you love the Torah, you love Yahweh. So, you want to eliminate the possibility of a divided loyalty? Love the Torah.
Love the Torah.
Yeah. Love the Torah. Now, we're recording, but we're no longer live, guys, and we're going to return to this passage next week. But this also strikes me as that, I mean, I admit it, that if I'm wrong because I'm too comfortable with Yahweh. Our relationship is too friendly, too loving,
I don't believe that can happen. That's an outrageous thought.
Yeah,
I don't think so either. But, you know, I want to tell you that I very seldom relate to Yahweh as God. I relate to him as my friend, my father and my friend. I enjoy the relationship as friend and father, and I find that the less I put him on a pedestal, and the more I am eyeball to eyeball, shoulder to shoulder, stride by stride, word for word, the more comfortable, the more fun the relationship is. And my sense is that's what he wants. But when Dode says, I love, Torah Ahab, Ahab is the Hebrew word for love. I love Torah. Now, when you realize that's what it means, is it possible to love a set of laws?
No.
You ever read the municipal code for traffic?
How about go pick up an IRS book or something?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Any bill
you can lift
by
one
Congress.
Of those.
Yeah, it's impossible to love a book of laws. It is impossible to love a book that is a set of rules. Rules limit. Laws limit. Teaching liberates. Guidance liberates.
Yeah.
Instruction liberates. I can love that which liberates.
Mm-hmm.
The total comfort of being myself because I know that my dad loves me. My dad is engaged in my life. He loves the Torah because he loves Yahweh, and he realized that our Heavenly Father, in nurturing and supporting and uplifting and protecting us, and the Torah are the same.
You
and
know,
so that's the profound thought that you get right down to the bottom of it, is that Yahweh and the Torah are the same, and they're both bad. You know,
I mean, the very concept of embracing laws or governments. I mean, government writes laws, and government is put there not to advance your freedom. It's put there to limit freedom.
Restrict.
Yeah.
You know, every conversation that meaningful. Conversations, father-son, that I've had with either of my two boys, has had a combination of, based on the things that I've learned in life, if you do the following in this circumstance, the likelihood is it will turn out well for you. There'll be a benefit for you if you follow this advice. But since it's your choice, I need to also warn you that based upon what I've learned and I've seen through a life's experience, that if you make these choices over here, that it will turn out poorly for you.
Then
these will be the consequences. And so every time that I put in a father-son role with my children on that basis, I do talk about both benefits, you know, the good advice and the benefits, and bad choices and the consequence. When you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, which is father to son, father to daughter throughout, it's exactly the same way, and there really is an equal amount of both. The whole process of it is a father speaking to, in most cases, a wayward child, and the father saying, this is how we reconcile our relationship, and you get all the benefits. This is how this is how you go further and further and further astray, and here's the consequence. And so that is every bit of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms then is completely and totally consistent with a father trying to raise a child. And you say, well, but you know, there's
exactly
3,000 pages of that. Yeah, that's 3,000 pages of father talking about all of the life experiences, everything you can go through in life trying to raise a child. Yeah. That's
well, he gave us every bit of direction, but again, I just don't think that there's, I think due to religion, most people will never take him up on the offer. That's it.
You know, I was reading
primarily
due to
that he's a Lord.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I thought was interesting about Ezekiel is that when Ezekiel was brought up to heaven, to see what heaven was like. First thing it was, he was transformed to a spiritual entity. But even as a spiritual entity, the first thing that Yahweh provides for Ezekiel once he arrives is the ability for him to stand upright. So Ezekiel didn't even have this even thought for a nanosecond of, oh wow, I'm in front of the great light. This is actually God in heaven. I better bow down. No, I mean, first thing that God says is, you know, first of all, I'm transforming you into spirit, so you can come up here and see heaven. And second of all, I am equipping you to stand upright. That's pretty cool.
Because Yahweh has no ego. He's not interested in getting people down on all fours, that's for sure.
Yeah, I
has
think,
no fear of losing yeah. power.
Yeah, I'm going to challenge the ego thing in one regard. I think that Yahweh is very concerned about the degradation of his name and nature on earth. And he is very much committed to the idea that it is essential for people to know that he's not going to go and ignore the degradation of his name or his character or the negation of man's attempts to negate his promises. He's just not going to do
that.
That's
the one thing he says he will not forgive.
That doesn't take an ego. I mean, that's look, ego, no ego, whatever. If somebody went out and they subscribed my name to say this guy is a child molester and he's molested the whatever. It wouldn't have anything to do with ego, but it just have to do with truth.
Yeah.
And running my name through
God's
the dirt.
God's going to be absolutely certain. He tells us over and over again that on account of his name, he is going to demonstrate conclusively who he is, what he stands for, and he's doing it for the sake of his name and reputation.
And you know, yeah, for his reputation. And as long as people are going to attach religious notions to his reputation, they're in the wrong. They're in the wrong. I mean, you know, we got to stand straight up against that nonsense.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly the stuff Dode's talking about here.
I think it also means
loyalties.
Something to us too. For example, I never defend myself. I mean, if you were to Google my name, you'll find hundreds of thousands of statements, articles, blogs, and everything else. I never go to any of them. I never, ever defend myself. Defending my name, defending my reputation, is a waste of time. Defending Yahweh's name, defending his reputation, is the essence of time, the basis of life. So I
By
think
the
that,
way,
yes.
Aren't you flattered? I mean, really. You know, if there were people out there writing blogs about me and this, how much they hated me and what a jerk I was, then I'd be flattered. I really would be flattered.
Well, you know, Larry, it used to bother me. And then when I devoted all of my outreach to a singular thing, which was to expose patriotism and politics and religion, and to, while at the same time witnessing to Yahweh's testimony. At that point, I no longer cared. It's a sense of satisfaction. No, but I just no longer cared because I realized that Yahweh's testimony, his perspective, is so unpopular that you can't share it without being rejected.
Imagine making such an impact in somebody's life. That they spend hours writing about you.
Well, but you know, I can't view it that way. The reason I can't view it that way is because I'm not doing anything except focusing on what Yahweh had to say and sharing what that means. And so
I know
it's not because of me.
Okay.
But I can tell you that so few people stand up against the crowd and say, wait a minute, you're all going the wrong direction. So few people do that, that if you are willing to do it, you are going to get noticed. You aren't going to have a lot of friends. But the friends you do have are going to be like those that are joining us tonight, their family.
Yeah, but most people just don't want to hear it. They just don't want to hear it.
A great example here is that I listened to the shows on Shattering Myths, and I was really disappointed with myself and my lack of professionalism. And I was horrified as I listened to these shows. And then I shared, both on the forum and with others, particularly those that listen to the show the most, my dismay with my lack of polish and professionalism. And to a person, all of them said, that's not how we hear it, because they're
family.
That's
not how I hear it.
Because
that's not
your
how
family.
I hear it.
Because you're family.
It's just not how I hear it. I got a pretty good ear for that. Okay. Yeah, I'm family, but I also, I I'm not sitting here trying to stroke your ego, but you're a walking encyclopedia, pal. That's it. And you can get into pretty much any aspect of anything that comes on that show and bring some enlightenment to it, for the most part. And I just don't see it that way. I just don't, listen to some of these other guys on the radio,
Yeah, well, that's...
they don't sound any better.
Yeah, ultimately, content trumps style, and
maybe
when I read,
I was to go with style, there's two people on the radio I'd listen to: Barry Farber, and I don't know if you know who he is.
Yes, I like his style too.
I always looked at him as kind of a master of radio, and Dr. Savage. Those two have
like
the style.
I like Savage's style. I hate his content. But
his content is always wrong.
He's always wrong. He's wrong about everything. But
he kicked me off his page, his guy that watched me. I kicked him because they kept talking about the, when Yahweh shows up and there's no diminishment of his light and everybody gets melted. They were trying to say it was a nuclear bomb.
No.
That was Savage's take. I said, what? You're kidding me. Whatever.
The thing that I was going to say is having just recently made it, read at kind of one sitting, all of Isaiah. God says many times that I looked for someone. I couldn't find anyone. I wanted to share my offer. I wanted to have somebody convey a warning while sharing the truth. I couldn't find anybody. And so
that's wild,
realize,
isn't it? That's just wild. I know you said
that.
There
just aren't a whole lot of people willing to do this. I mean, it's not like you won the lottery and said, okay, I've surveyed of a million or a billion qualified candidates, I think you're the most qualified. No, you're the only one that volunteered. I mean, that really is what he's saying, is that no, it's not like I had 7 billion candidates out there and you all did a rehearsal for me, you all did an audition, and you were the most qualified. No, it's actually...
Well, that's a way to look at it.
It's actually you were the only one who was willing, so we're going to do this.
So we're stuck with you, huh?
Yeah, so you're the only one that was willing.
Whoa!
I looked, and no one else would even respond to me. So when I like on the Prophet of Doom thing, I didn't know very well at the time. I was just beginning to shake religion and just coming to know him. Kind of like Moshe didn't know him from Adam, really. When they started their quest together and relationship together. Same thing with really Abraham. We all start by not knowing him and come to know him. And, it's just dumbfounded.
I think
the
first 800 pages I ever got from you wasn't even in Yada Yada. It was just kind of a bunch of writings you had somewhere.
Yeah, it's true.
Did you remember doing that? Because I at work actually printed that, and I came back and there was like 900 pages, and I was like, wow, I had to keep reloading, you know.
Yeah. Are you willing to go where the words are? Are you willing to go wherever I ask you to go, and are you willing to go where the words lead? And I'm just convinced there just wasn't anybody else that was willing.
You know what's really wild about that?
What?
I mean, it's his words that count. That's what he says he is. These are my words.
Right.
He doesn't call them a Bible or a Tanakh or anything else.
I think there'd be 7 billion people standing in line, all rushing to do that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you think so. And you talk about going where the words lead. That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're way outside the norm.
Right. You start with the creation account and you realize he really is God. But by the time you're halfway through the first book of the Torah, for those who have started recognizing that he's God, it's not that he ceases being God, it's just that's no longer your perspective. Your perspective is Dad. It's just a marvelous thing to go where the words lead.
Well, I'm looking at him, I look at him like this great guy that wants to meet you. Kind of thing. That's how I do it.
Spend time together.
Yeah.
Be great friends.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great offer. I mean,
right.
The offer of, I mean, people kill themselves to go sit at a table with a movie star, as an example. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the creator of the universe here.
Correct.
This is...
Correct. Who actually has the capacity to make us immortal, to make us perfect, to adopt us into his family, to enrich us, and to empower us. He actually has all of the capability to do all of that.
But can you imagine we don't drag
a bunch of muck into his house. and that we are willing to engage and spend quality time with him.
Get to know him.
Yeah, listen to what he has to say.
Imagine that. He wants you to spend time with him to have a relationship with him.
Yeah, gosh. It just happens to be, I get to sit down at the table and have the best wine in the universe, the choicest meats in the universe, at the choicest table with the greatest view, and my dining companion is Yahweh and others who have chosen to participate in his family, all of which add to the excitement of the meal.
So you're talking about a bunch of winners, basically.
Yeah, we get to sit there and listen to him teaching us more and more as we go.
But we get to respond to it. Yeah, we can. You know, it's not just that it's this cosmic teaching experience. It's an interactive.
I mean, there's actually humor involved here. There's a lot of things.
Oh, absolutely. And if you don't think that when we're going to go and look at life, that we're going to giggle at the camel and the platypus, I think we are. You know, when we're going to
platypus. Look at the great northern beaver. I mean, there's a wild one.
Right.
I mean, he eats wood. You know, I mean, he lives on his stuff. Stashes it at the bottom of the river, so when it freezes over, he can get down there and bring it in.
Breathes air, but lives underwater.
It's just wild. I mean, that's a pretty wild animal, right? And I see why that was made. It creates all kinds of different ecosystems for all the other animals.
Yeah.
You know that. When they build a dam, they build a pond.
What's the purpose there?
Yeah. Oh, or you look at, what were you thinking about with the mosquito? I mean, come on. I mean,
gee, thanks.
Yeah, gnats and mosquitoes? Are you crazy?
I don't get that one. I don't get the whole crocodile thing, okay? I always had a problem with them.
I had a problem with the crocodile.
Yeah, I really don't get it. I don't get that. I mean, they make everybody's life miserable. Come on. Get them out of there. Oh, those are the serpents, though. You know, that's the fifth day. Yeah.
Yeah, that is. They are the cold-blooded, belly-scraping serpents.
Those are your clerics, baby. I mean,
yeah,
they're right there.
There you are. There you are. Those are the crocodiles. There's a purpose for them, too. You know, they are illuminating. Yep. Yep. You know, it's going to be fun in eternity, and I want to go see that star that now is actually, you know, there's a star out there that the scientists have found that is a diamond. The entire star is a diamond.
Oh, the giant diamond. Yeah.
The giant diamond.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't wait to go see that.
That sounds fun.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What do you think it's worth?
Nothing.
Everything, nothing. Yes.
There you go.
I'm going to be happy not to carry currency. No credit cards, no currency. It's the finest restaurant. You get the most wonderful table at the finest restaurants with the finest food at the best travel accommodations and the best means of travel and money.
Do you think he'll ever let us blow into other civilizations?
You know
where they
may be
learning about him.
I think
that would be wild.
You know what? I think that during the millennial celebration of Shabbat, since most of us are not descendants of Jacob, that we are going to be able to even travel back in time and examine this whole universe. There'll be some restrictions put on us so we don't screw things up. But I think there'll be my sense is that in the new universe there's going to be lots of life. And I do think going to be able to interact with life.
Yeah, see, wouldn't that be that would be incredible.
Yes.
That would be incredible. Those are the things I look forward to. I know it seems weird, you know, to want something like that, but I really think that would be nice.
Well, it's a little thing. It's not as grand as it's going to be, but dolphins obviously have a language. They're extraordinarily into relationships and family. Wouldn't it be cool to be able to swim and to be able to talk with dolphins?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
that
it would
be pretty wild. I mean, I could get into that for a month or two, probably.
Yeah. Or blue whales and humpback whales. They talk.
Yeah.
Family relations.
They sing.
That's right. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I even think that, wouldn't it be kind of cool to be able to spend time up there at Kodiak and experience what it's like, you know, to live amongst bears, particularly if you didn't have to deal with gnats or mosquitoes or.
Well, I'd even like to get to know the wolverines up there. I've got special spot
wolf.
In my heart.
My
for
favorite,
those
my favorite animal has always been the wolf.
I love the wolf. You know,
I've got a video here where a wolverine kicks four of their asses and takes their deer from them. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, wolverines are amazing creatures. I mean, they are amazing.
Yeah.
So are
honey
badgers.
And that's right. And the wolf is knows that it's not going to risk losing a limb because it's death.
But it knows it's going to lose a limb should it tangle with that wolverine, and the wolverine will go after four of them.
Yeah,
it really will. It'll run him right down. I mean, you know, he's just out to eat.
That's right.
He'll eat anything. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right.
But
I
saw where a guy raised two of them, and man, they were lovely animals. They really were. They want to run with him and play with him. Now he's very careful. He'll only take them out one at a time, because after all, it's their rules at that point. You know.
Yeah, definitely a wild animal. But, you know, in eternity, we can take on the physical form and interact with the species, but yet if something were to turn nasty, you'd just stop that ordinary flow of time and you'd
become energy again.
Become energy again and, you know, reboot. So it's, You don't.
Well, you're also going to be incredibly smarter, so you're going to be able to deal with a lot of things you could not deal with today.
Yeah, that's kind of why I like the idea of inscribing the Torah in us, and I think that for those who are here on Earth for that 1,000 years, the Torah that's going to be inscribed is the existing Torah, just a perfect edition of it. But for those of us who are not going to be spending our eternity here on Earth in that 1,000 years, I don't think it's the existing Torah at all that's inscribed in us. I think it's.
I've got a question.
Augmented.
Guidance. You got it. You know, you're now. You know, infinite in time. You can go from energy to matter. You've got the whole universe to explore. There's some dangerous stuff out there, and you don't want to screw up. You know, the last thing at that point is you don't want to make God unhappy with you. You want to make certain that you're operating all of your features in the in accord with how they were designed.
The lion lays down with the lamb. What does that mean?
Oh, in the
to you.
Yeah, in the during the millennial Shabbat, the lion and the lamb lay down together. First, one of the things is that carnage and death are going to be very different. You know, anybody born in the millennial Shabbat lives all the way through it. If you go into it, you live all the way through it. The only death in the millennial Shabbat is if you
claim to be a prophet,
start misleading people, then you are excommunicated from it. But
instantly killed by your own parents.
Yeah, I just think what he's saying is that while he created us to eat meat and to be omnivores, and he created certain animals to be carnivores, I think that there's the whole concept of nourishment and the interaction between animals and between man and other animals is going to profoundly change during that period of time. And there's where the concept of one has to die for another to live isn't going to be the case. So I would not be surprised if we continue to eat meat, but without another animal having to die for us to be able to do that.
Well, you know what I thought? See, this is funny because this is what I was thinking. I was thinking meat will grow on trees or something. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, it could. Protein could that tastes like meat could absolutely grow on trees. It's going to. Yahweh is going to remake the entire earth like Eden. Now we are a protein craving animal. Without protein, our ability to think is hugely degraded. Without protein, our ability to be energetic, to be just to have a positive outlook.
That explains why vegans are so stupid.
Right. We are a being that was designed to run on protein. And so in the Garden of Eden, where it talks about all the trees and everything you can eat from, there is more to those trees than just fruit, because man could not have survived an all-fruit diet. There is no protein that grows on a tree. Nuts grow on trees. So that would be a form of protein. But other than that, and that's not enough. You know, so you're not going to get your carbs for the most part, and you're not going to get your protein. So I do think that there is something to what you just said,
Well, you said it first. I'm thinking the exact same thing, that it'll grow in bushes, grow on trees, whatever.
Yes.
So why should a lion, you know, go chase down a zebra or a wildebeest?
Right.
Just walk right up and eat.
Yeah. It's just kind of like Yahweh provided manna and for the Israelites, but they got tired of it because it was just manna and everyday manna. And Yahweh is pretty clear in his depictions of meals that we're going to celebrate together. He definitely is going to have wine as part of our meals, and he says it's going to be the finest aged wines, and he says the most delectable meats. Now, I happen to like
some
meat.
Lamb in there.
Yeah, I happen to like meat. I like there's a lot of meats. I mean, I love salmon, for example. I love halibut. Turkey, chicken.
I'm hungry
beef.
Now.
Yeah, beef, lamb.
I might have to let you guys go and go get some food.
Well, I know you're a New York Strip guy, and
I am.
Too.
I am.
When I go out, it's a 75% chance is what I'm going to eat. You know,
well, if I go to a steak restaurant, I'll order the New York Strip. If I'm barbecuing at home, I'll do a New York or fillets, either one. I'm extraordinarily varied on my meats. I like a lot. My diet's pretty varied. I like a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah. For example, a marinated skirt steak at a Mexican restaurant. Is pretty darn delicious. That's what I had today for lunch.
What was it?
Most Mexican restaurants, they grill a skirt steak because it's really thin, and because it's thin, it accepts the marinade extremely well. And so,
If
you go to a Mexican restaurant and order a steak, chances are it's going to be a skirt steak, and it's going to, which is very thin. And it's going to be heavily marinated before they put it on the grill. And that's what I had for lunch, that and a Anaheim chili that was stuffed and flour tortillas with pico de gallo.
And I love it.
Well, that's some pretty fancy Mexican eating over there, Yada.
Oh, we have really. I live in an area where the Mexican restaurants are spectacular, and there's two in particular that I go to regularly that I haven't seen a menu in years. I literally go, and they say, welcome back.
The usual?
Today, the waiter today, his name is Shaul, and I've talked about Shaul. What his name is.
You're kidding.
No, he's Hebrew. He is literally Shaul, and we've talked about what his name means. We greet each other with shalom. It's actually a hug from my waiter. A hug, a hearty handshake, a shalom. We'll talk about the condition of Israel. Talk about the Torah. Talk about Hebrew. And so
that's cool.
That's my was my lunch experience.
But you did share the truth with him a while back.
I did.
Has he asked for any more?
Nope. And, that's my, although he is really, if I show up and he runs over to where I am, gives me a handshake, usually a hug, says, I'm so glad to see you. So I certainly didn't scare him away with the truth. But he has, not to my knowledge, reached out to me based on the,
Well, I have shared Yada Yah and ITG with the peach guy. He sells these really good Georgia peaches on the side of the road. I go over and get $20 from him, $20 worth, fill a whole bin up. And he was very impressed with it. I hope he stays with it.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. He's been pretty. he happens to be my closest friend, but he is really pretty impressive. And he's a really good communicator. So, I'm not, it's good. All right, fellas, I'm going
to
go, my genetically altered, canine here, derivative of the wolf. Was a genetically altered to
he's
be
just a child.
English lab. I'm going to go and take and feed.
All right, you guys have a good weekend. Shalom.
Okay.
Yeah, you do the same, JB.
Okay,
thanks, Yada.
It was fun.
Have a good night.
Bye. Good night, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.